And our special guest tonight, Dr. Christopher Holmes. We're going to take your phone calls this hour, the next hour, open lines. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Dr. Christopher Holmes. Your phone calls, of course, back to the afterlife as we talk about some of these fascinating, fascinating topics. How important for you to understand all this was your training as a forensic psychologist, let's say?
Well, absolutely against everything I've learned. In fact, everything I learned in the mainstream of modern psychology, I now regard as wrong, fundamentally mistaken. Like, psychology today is defined as the science of behavior and the mind. They have no psychology of the heart and soul. They have the complete wrong understanding of consciousness. They have the wrong understanding of the nature of self. They don't think we have a self. They think the self experience is produced up in portions of the cortex rather than there being any self within the heart. So I see the whole of mainstream modern psychology as fundamentally mistaken.
All right, let's go to some of the calls here. Here's east of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yeah,
hi, Mr. Holmes. How are you?
Good.
Great show. I was calling. I wanted to tell you that as soon as you started talking about the sun, I ran to get an old map that a friend and I made when I started following a yogic path in my early 20s. And we made a little graphic of the different spiritual regions as you go from the physical to the Anda and Brahman and Parbrahm and on and on. And basically, they had seven spiritual regions.
Yeah.
But they mentioned, you know, like the different lotuses that you would go through, and those were also suns. And there was a red sun, say, in the Parbrahm, the third spiritual region, that was a four-petaled lotus. And I wondered if you had thought about the different kinds of suns that might be something the soul would travel through or become one with.
Yeah, I see the main sun is our own sun, which I believe is a higher spiritual world. And then there's a sun behind the sun. So I think there are portals between these worlds. And in a way, those portals are like zero-point wormholes where you kind of disappear through something, a portal that opens up into a higher dimensional space. So I believe there are portals between these different levels. And there, as you say, there's a sun, but then I would say the sun behind the sun, sometimes referred to as the invisible sun. The starry world is beyond the sun.
Well, that sounds very similar. And I did want to ask one other question. Just a year or two ago, we had a planetary alignments. And I wondered if you thought that that might have bearing on opening up portals as well, or opening up consciousness, even though that's more of a physical thing than that we would feel rather than a heartfelt thing, or would that you combine that somehow?
Well, I would combine them, and I mean, I believe the planets and astrology affects our essence. Like, the most important thing, I think, in astrology is the structure of the elements and understanding what kind of element you are. And I believe our essence is interconnected to the planetary life, that influences us in the subtle dimensions.
Well, thank you. You have a
yeah.
good night.
Yeah, thanks for your questions. Good questions.
Next up, first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
How's it going?
Good. Go ahead.
Dr. Holmes, I worked for Sean Fisher, who I know interviewed you for his documentary Metaphysia earlier this year.
That was great fun. How's the movie coming along?
I think it's coming along quite well. I haven't talked to him for a couple weeks, but I'm wishing him good luck. I think it's coming along just fine. But my question for you is, we're talking about changing our consciousness here, and I'm trying really hard to do that, and I was just wondering what advice you have to help in that process.
And what do you mean by changing your consciousness?
I guess just aligning with the universe a little more, or...
Good. Okay. I mean, that's exactly... See, I see most... We want to learn to live in the consciousness of the heart. So as you go about your day, try to remember to come back to being present here now, wherever you are, and connect with your breathing. Your soul life is connected to your breath. There's four levels to your breath and four levels to your soul. So when you come back, just being present and connect with your breath. And I tap myself over the heart space sometimes so I can feel that brings my attention to that area. And try to experience yourself being in your heart. Your heart space is empty in ways. In the way there's, in mystical teachings, there's a form of nothingness at the heart of being. In a way, there's a vacated space within your heart. This is described in Kabbalah and Judaism. There's a hollow within the heart. So in a way, we want to center in the heart. So I actually tap myself over the heart and try to be centered in my heart space. And the mystics say self-realization, which is the attainment of the next level of awakening, involves the dissolution of the false mind into the lotus of the heart. So more and more, you, in a way, the turning of the mind is an obstacle to consciousness. You want to lessen or still the turning of the mind and learn to be more centered in your breath and tap yourself over the chest, try to feel awakened in your heart. And remember yourself. I practice self-remembering, meaning as I go about my life, I make efforts every day to be waking up here and waking up there to try to increase my wakefulness and build on that.
Chris, have you read or are you aware of the book called The Book of Urantia?
Yeah, I have it. Right. I can see it in front of me here right now. But I hope to.
I don't know if I'm remote viewing and saw the book there, or I'm guessing because some of your thoughts are pretty poignant in that book. Very similar.
I want to explore that. That's one of the mystery books that I just haven't yet had time to come to.
Okay, I think you'll be fascinated by it.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah.
Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Good morning. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Hi. I had a question for Christopher.
Sure.
I was listening earlier how you were saying how the heart connects with the mind and to the spirit. I had a heart transplant 2 years ago, and I was curious why I went, if that's the case, why wouldn't I have noticed a lot of changes in my mind and thinking and whatnot?
Yeah, well, I think your memory is really in the more subtle fields, information fields, that the heart, yeah, it's not in the actual matter of the heart, but it's in the subtle fields that interpenetrate the heart. So your memory is in this deeper field information. So even though your heart might be replaced, I mean, there are a lot of paranormal experiences that people have with heart transplants. Did you have any of those type experiences?
Such like?
Have you ever read Sylvia Brown's book called A Change of Heart?
No.
Well, you might look at that. And it's reported a number
of
people have written about this. Where someone receives someone else's heart, but they have experiences that connect them to the donor or visions of the donor, or it changes their own psychological makeup. She's one lady who's written about this. It's discussed also in The Heart's Code by Paul Pearsall. But it's a good question, I don't really want to pretend that I understand all these mysteries. You know, I'm still an explorer and trying to understand it, but it's a good question. Why doesn't changing the heart then change our personal identity and memory? And I'm saying it's because that is more established in the zero-point fields. And that the material heart is changing, but the deeper, the psychical heart is still your own psychical heart.
You know, there have been some incredible stories, Christopher, of people who have had transplants, organs, of course, from people and who have passed on in most cases. And people generally take on either their personality or get some sights. You know, it's been made into a couple great movies.
Yeah.
But it's very strange.
Yeah, it shows in a way that the heart donated by someone still seems connected to the soul life of that person. That's what it suggests. And it happens with other organs. I mean, sometimes I think kidney, transplanted kidney, it can affect your food preferences and things. We don't really understand memory, where memory is stored. In a way, memory seems inherent actually to matter, like within matter. It's like where you're having Sheldrake on tomorrow. He's such an important theorist, and actually, his model is like there's this group mind, and that's in the subtle fields. So the memory is really in the subtle fields. It's not that memory is recorded in cell assembly somewhere in the brain. It's more that it's inherent to within the nature of matter.
By the way, that book, A Change of Heart, it's Claire Sylvia.
Thank you. Right. Thank you. Good.
Of course, Sylvia has written so many books, I thought maybe that was possible, too.
Oh.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi there. I'm calling for Christopher.
Yeah, go ahead.
Nice to hear a Canadian doing such important work. I wanted to bring up about the holographic universe. I've heard people talk about the holographic universe and that we're all part
Talbot's
of it.
I've
studied the making of holograms, and what doesn't seem to be brought forward is the aspect of the viewer's unique perspective of that whole, or that the person's unique perspective of the universe might be due to their heart resonance frequency, or like you were saying, like the zero field that's unique to them. And when you make a hologram, there's two different kind of basic types. There's transmission and there's projection holograms. And again, people don't really refer to or bring that aspect when they talk about the holographic universe, and I kind of think, you know, that's the difference between projection and transmission when we're kind of talking about psychology. And I was wondering if you had a take on this, and I'll hang up and listen off the air. Thanks.
Well, no, hold on. And
hold on. Still there?
Like, interesting question.
Sorry.
And one thing in response to Talbot's book and the holographic paradigm in general is that most of the people who use the holographic paradigm don't think there is any interior source of coherent light. Like when you do holographic photography, you have a point, a laser light, and that provides a source of coherent light. Now, Carl Pribram says there are no laser beams in the head. No, none of the holographers think that we have an interior source of coherent light. So when
well,
I say there's a Jiva Atma within the heart, this is a source of coherent light, which is the basis for creating holographic experience.
Yeah,
that's not in Talbot. Talbot also doesn't have this concept of there being a coherent light source. Now, I haven't really answered your question, but I wanted to bring that up. Sorry.
No, the other part was the transmission and projection holograms, like psychology.
See, I think creation is projected around the central point out of the physics of light within this vacated space in the heart, and reality is spun around that. It's hard really to explain it because it's a very complex kind of subject. So the difference between, see, I think our reality is projected around the central point.
Explain that.
And it's we're lit up from within without.
Explain that.
Well, see, it's like Blavatsky says, the zero points are the materials by which the gods and other invisible powers clothe themselves in bodies. I say at the core of your being, you have a zero point center, and around that, that's surrounded by different bodies which are created out of the quantum vacuum due to the spin properties of your monadic essence. I mean, I haven't had time to. I believe that we have a monadic essence that exists in seven-dimensional hyperspace. And this has certain spin properties, and the spin properties of that monadic essence is like a Kalubi-Yau space in modern physics. It creates material bodies surrounding that central point. And it's the interaction of light emerging from within that illuminates the matters of these different bodies.
East of the Rockies, your turn. Hi there.
Hey, my name's Thor. I'm calling from Warsaw, Kentucky.
Hello, Thor.
I wanted to touch on that Urantia book thing you were talking about.
Sure.
When I read the Urantia book, it talked about a guy called Melchizedek.
Yes.
He sent a teaching mission all across the earth. And I said to myself, well, if he did that, there's got to be proof. Well, 20 minutes after I read this in the Urantia book, there was a story on CNN. They said They found a giant rock in the middle of Los Lunas, New Mexico. It's over 6,000 years old, and it has the Ten Commandments carved in a combination of ancient Hebrew and Greek.
Whoa.
And I just wanted to turn you on to that fact, and I wanted to thank you for having the show.
You are welcome, Thor. Thank
everything
you.
This guy is saying is just turning me on completely.
Thanks. Boy, I'll look out for that.
That was an interesting story.
And yeah.
It's you never know what has gone on.
No, there's so many unknowns, really, just about human history and our origins and extraterrestrials. There's just so many unknowns.
Well, and the greatest unknown, of course, Christopher, is the universe. And whether there's multi-universes or just one, multi-dimensions or just what we are in, it's very perplexing because I think it all leads back to some kind of intelligent design. It just doesn't happen by accident.
No, I absolutely agree. I believe in intelligent design, that there's creative life principle. And I mean, I believe that not only there's intelligent design, but it's actually that design manifests the formula, the one is divided by three to give seven. Just like the Godhead has a triune nature and creates seven planes of being. So the 1-3-7 principle, I think, is a fundamental principle of intelligent design that's evident in all phenomena of nature.
Does physics prove any of this?
Well, I mean, take the physical world. What's it composed of? Protons, electrons, and neutrons, three types of particles, and seven rows of elements in the periodic tables, okay?
And maybe a few more we don't even
know about. There's 1-3-7. Take light. Divide light by a three-sided prism gives you a spectrum of seven colors. See, they're both examples of the 1, 3, and 7. If you look at particle families in physics, there are three main particle families, hadrons, leptons, and gluons, which are the messenger particles. It's three main families of particles. Each of those exists in three dimensions. So really, yeah, again, it's these laws of 3 and 7. I study these in the area of science because most scientists always think dualistically. Like they think there's matter and energy. Well, now in the new science, there's not only matter and energy, there's also information, which is latent within the medium. So it's called third force science. Dean Radin talks about this. It's called third, and Talbot does. It's third, fourth science, that information is latent within space. So whereas we always saw things dualistically, now we're arriving at the idea of the triunity of nature.
Okay, your website, of course, is zeropoint.ca, because you're in Canada, zeropoint.ca. We'll be back with final phone calls with Dr. Christopher Holmes, and then next hour, open lines. Okay, the itinerary for my Houston trip is up there on the coasttocoastam.com website if you want to go up there and take a look. And I guess they're going to try to give me a little time to sign any of the books. The books will not be sold at the amphitheater. So if you pick it up on Amazon.com at a steep discount, or if you pick it up at your favorite bookstore, you can bring it with you in time permitting, and there should be. I'll just quickly sign it for you if you want. Those of you who aren't going to be in the Houston area, of course, the book Worker in the Light is what we're talking about, and it is wrapping up its first printing, first edition, and hopefully it'll get to the second edition. Well, if it doesn't, I had fun doing it anyway. Back in a moment at Coast to Coast AM. Okay, back with our guest, Dr. Christopher Holmes, and the rest of your phone calls. Christopher, tell me your next projects, by the way.
I haven't thought about that. I've been doing a series of reviews. To explain what I teach, I'm starting to do critiques of other people's work to contrast my own work with their, like critique of The Secret and doing a critique of Down the Rabbit Hole.
Tell me about your thought of The Secret, because that's a hot movie right now.
Well, I think there are elements of value in it, but I mean, to consider that is The Secret is
Don't
completely fanciful, and there are far deeper secrets. In fact, most mystical teachings, they're concerned with how do we get beyond this level of reality created by all these attractions and repulsions, like how do we get free of this matrix of creation? And in a way...
Well, do you think it was well done? Did it get the message across? You hesitate.
Well, got different messages. I think there's far too much focus that it's just our thoughts that create reality. Like, I see us as three-brained beings. We function mentally, emotionally, and physically. Okay, so, like, to create your own reality, it's not just a matter of thinking and conceiving it. It's also the emotional aspect of it, because the thought is given form within the heart. In Kabbalah, the heart is that which gives form to the attributes. So it needs to be a combination of the thoughts and the emotional center, and then also the physical action. So I think for people to manifest things, you want to, you know, it's the thinking, feeling, and action, all three components. The fellow on Oprah stressed that when he spoke of the secrets. He talked about the threefoldness of the process. In other ways, I thought the movie focuses far too much on kind of materialist goals and enhancement of ego and money and, you know, status and such, rather than mystical goals, which is really surrender of the egoic nature to realize your deeper self. And that's a far more deeper and secret process.
All right, more calls. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Michael from Columbus, Ohio.
Thank you, Michael.
I lived in Columbus that year there. I worked at Upham Hall.
Oh, I got about like 4 inches of snow on the ground and 2 inches on top of ice.
Oh, dear. I think it's coming this way, too.
Yeah. The thing I wanted to ask is I heard a caller call in earlier about a heart transplant.
Yeah.
And what I didn't hear him ask is about the artificial heart, a heart that's not real at all. It's mechanical. How does that fit in with your view?
Well, see, I'm saying that really the heart has different dimensions to it, okay? That the physical heart, psychical, spiritual, and then the ultimate divine element within the higher dimensions of the heart. So although a person might have the physical heart replaced by a mechanical device, it's still within the space of the heart. Like the essential heart center is what I would call the bliss sheath, which is...
So it's not the heart you're talking about, it's the area of the heart. It's like the center of chi.
Yeah. Yeah, it's in the physics of the zero-point fields, okay? But that sustains the heart. Normally, your own psychical heart ensouls your physical heart. But if the heart's removed and you have a mechanical device, your psychical heart is still there. It would be very interesting to examine the feeling qualities of people who have had a mechanical heart inserted. It likely takes some time to feel their feelings as fully for a while.
Yeah.
But I imagine that would be restored, though, over time. I don't know. That would be my expectation.
So what you're saying
See, in psychology, people don't today even think you feel feelings in your heart. They think you feel feelings up in your head, in the limbic system. There's no psychology of the heart. But how many people go and tell your loved one, you know, I love you with all my head? People don't. In a way, we know we feel feelings in the heart. There's no understanding of how that actually works.
So your theory is then that even with the mechanical heart, that somehow through time, the body replaces the soul within that energy field that's there, whether it be mechanical or not.
The soul, the ensouling heart influence is still there. Yes. And I believe the body is ensouled through the action of the heart, through the infusion of soul energies into the blood. And it's related to the process of oxygenation. Your soul is connected to breathing. Like in Genesis, God breathes into man a living soul. So the heart and soul action are both connected to what I'm saying is your true self, this heart center in higher dimensional space.
Okay.
There's a physics to it. You know, it's a complex subject, but I've tried to introduce aspects of it.
Let's go west of the Rockies.
Thank
you're on
you.
Coast to Coast with us. Hi there. Hello.
Oh, good evening, gentlemen.
Hey, go ahead, please.
Thanks for a very, very interesting broadcast.
You are welcome.
Well, first I want to ask, Dr. Holmes, I have in my hand a book I'm reading tonight, and it's called The Voice of the Heart by Neil Cohen. And are you the same gentleman, are you the same person, Dr. Holmes, that wrote the foreword to this book?
Yeah, I did.
Serendipity to hear your voice as I put the book down.
Oh yeah, it was some valuable work in that. Yeah,
I appreciated your comments about the blood as a stream of consciousness, and I'm sure you're familiar with the monograph that Rudolf Steiner did also on the blood as a sacred stream.
No, I'm not. It's a type of material. If I saw that, I would read that.
Oh, like, love it.
You would love that.
It's easy to find. You can get it online.
Okay,
but
I'll look
to
that.
The reason for calling to ask you a question, if you haven't already answered it, I hope you haven't. I missed your first 20 minutes, is, you know, I've always, you know, I haven't heard you use the term sacred heart, which is a term that I've always used. And I've always considered the sacred heart to be located within the etheric body, and I'm wondering, where do you fall on that one?
Well, I would say I'm saying it's multidimensional. The way I understand the etheric body is the etheric body is between the physical and then the higher being bodies, the astral, mental, and beyond. So the etheric body is your etheric aura extends about a quarter inch past your body, and it's kind of gray striated. The etheric body is not too important, really. I'm saying the heart center has a much deeper physics into zero-point fields existing within the quantum vacuum. So it's far beyond the etheric body. It's rooted into, just like our universe, our huge universe emerged from a point. I'm saying you have a deep, deep heart center rooted into the quantum vacuum, rooted into the grounds of being.
Is there any kind of machinery that can start registering some of this?
That's a very interesting question. I don't know. I would think so. I mean, it's electromagnetic phenomena. You know, I'm saying there's this bliss sheath I would describe in the heart. I would describe it as a mass of unemergent light. So that there may be ways of detecting, if not that, at least its influence. I really don't know. It's an interesting question.
All right, next up, let's go to our east of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah,
how you guys doing
tonight?
We
are fine. Thank you.
Great. I've been listening to the show for years. It's funny that you guys are talking about a lot of the same books that I have. I was just, I heard you, or was it Art, talking to J.J. Hertek, and I have the Keys of Enoch right here, too, and your Rancho book. And I just wanted to tell Christopher, I'm a huge heart being. My heart sometimes throughout my life has almost even gotten in the way.
Yeah.
But in the same token, though, I have been able to have out-of-body experiences. I've had experiences with extraterrestrial beings. And, you know, in a lot of ways, to hear somebody like you talking about these things, I just start, you know, vibrating immediately. And,
yeah, it brings you back, hey, the feelings of it. Yeah.
And so I just wanted to tell you that ever since I was a very young boy, I memorized this poem. And to the best of my memory, it's from the Book of Ban Shu Kai. I don't know if that rings any bells with you.
No,
but,
it doesn't.
The poem goes like this, if you don't mind me telling it to you real quick. There are those misguided persons in the world who will see you harmed. They will confront you with fists or await you in the darkness with their blades drawn. Do not fear them or become angry with them. Allow your heart to hold the emptiness of purity and your receptive spirit will hear the sadness and rage of your attacker's intentions. You will take them to the destruction they seek. That's the poem. But
the more, there's a way in which the more your heart is emptied, the more your consciousness is expanded into a volume of space or extends into the surrounds.
Right.
Yeah. And that's a beautiful poem. It had a beautiful line in there, the space in the heart of purity.
To hold the emptiness of purity. Yeah,
that's always the emptiness. In a way, we want to empty our hearts. There's this emptiness at the heart of being, but everybody's got all these desires that you have to empty them out, and the more you empty that space in the heart again, then in a way that establishes the basis for states of samadhi or expanded consciousness. States of samadhi have to be based on an awakened heart.
Sure.
Also, you don't want to kind of open, say, your brow chakra immediately because you get lost into the never worlds.
Oh, and I do.
Oh. Still there?
Yeah. I am. I think we lost a caller. Maybe.
He's gone. Okay. All right. First time caller line. It's your turn. You're on Coast to Coast.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Yes, this is Jacob calling from the Big Island of Hawaii.
Oh, hello, Jacob.
I'm really enjoying your show tremendously. I've listened to Art and you, George, for many, many years.
Thank you so much.
I have not heard Dr. Holmes before, but his whole conversation and subject matter I totally grok with. I'm at one with. And I wanted to bring up a book in relation to the subject matter tonight, if you've ever heard of it. It's called The Science of Being. It was written by a medium, Eugene Fersen, in 1923. And the original copy had been in somewhere, I believe, in England in the museum there. But it had went out of print and had been reprinted again in 1996, I believe. And it discusses the seven lessons, which are the absolute spirit, the life energy two, the relative matter, life energy.
You're trying to differentiate the seven. I'm afraid I'm not really familiar with that book.
It includes the laws of the mind force and absolute and spiritual power and the different worlds. And this was all coming through him as a medium.
I would be very interested. What I often find is I regard the deeper teaching as the heart doctrine. And a lot of books, even though they deal with extended faculties of human being, but the focus is more on the mind. And that's what I see a lot of what I call new think that's out there today, that focuses too much on the mind and the head. Instead of understanding the deeper mysteries of the heart, which I say is the true esoteric teaching. So I'm not sure about the book, sir, that you're mentioning. I would wonder about that. About
but
that
it
book.
Goes into, there are chapters that goes into that specifically, and speaking of the heart and the difference between the omnipresence, omniscience, and omnipotence.
Oh, yeah, really. Yeah,
yes.
Well, I'll watch for that, The Science of Being.
Yes, you can get it through, I believe there's one company that started to reprint it after 76 years, and that's the Health Research in Pomeroy, Washington.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And they are on the Internet at www.healthresearchbooks.com.
Great, good.
Right, I thank you, and
thank
you for your time and energy, both of you.
Christopher, why do you say that human beings may already be extraterrestrial? What do you mean by that?
Well, because... See, we are not the physical body. You are not the physical body. And when you're rid of your body, you'll rise and be attracted into this other dimensional realm, which is non-terrestrial, or it can be. Like if you pass into the sun, say I die and I pass into the sun. Like Dalai Lama says, when you die in Tibetan Buddhism, first you aim for the greater body of radiance. And then if you don't make that, you aim for the lesser body of radiance. So suppose we pass into a body of radiance upon death. Well, then that means I was never simply my terrestrial physical body. I never was that. There was always this higher dimensional level within myself. I just didn't know what I was.
You're just sort of using the old shell for a while, huh?
Yeah, we inhabit the body.
And we have, I mean, I believe we have different lives. I believe, you know, you die and then you live in the astral plane. You die again. You lose your astral body. You pass in the mental realm. You go return briefly to the sun and then you form a new mental body, astral body, physical body, and you're into another round. And you go through rounds of being clothed in different bodies as you come down out of higher dimensional space.
Do you practice the Kabbalah?
Not in a traditional way. I understand it in terms of the number study of it. Like the Kabbalah, the Tree of Life, it's a perfect embodiment of the law of 3 and 7. You have 10 spheres. You have the supernal triad and the 7 spheres below. In a way, it's a model of higher dimensional physics and geometry. So I've had certain experiences, I think I've climbed that inner ladder of self-realization and had experiences of that. But I don't, you know, I've never had a Kabbalistic teacher. I was invited after our last show. It was funny, it came up. I got a call the next week and from Guy Ritchie and invited to L.A. to come down and be in a documentary that he is doing on Kabbalah and Judaism. And that led to a kind of much deeper study of Kabbalah and particular ideas in Kabbalah. The idea of the vacated space within the heart is profoundly important.
All right, so much so, Dr. Christopher Holmes, thank you so much. Where do you get the book, Zero Point Teachings?
I'm afraid that they're only accessible through me, through the website, and yeah, at least at this time.
Zeropoint.ca.
Yeah.
All right, great. Christopher, thanks so much for being on the program. When I come back, we've got a pure hour now of open lines for you right here on Coast to Coast AM.